Thank you very much, Rabbi Reitz. Meirai for Rabbi Isai. I really don't know what I'm doing here today. I was once invited to speak at a medical conference on a topic of bioethics, and the chairman gets up and made the following statement. An expert is somebody who comes from out of town with slides. Rabbi Palmer comes from Passaic. He was here with slides. He's the expert on Birkas Hachama. And what can I add to that? I'm an expert in only one thing, if any. And that is, I'm in a rather unique position to make a comment about the response, the reaction to Birkas Hachama, this Machzor, in contradistinction to the Birkas Hachama of the last Machzor 28 years ago. On both occasions, I wrote a little volume about Birkas Hachama. 28 years ago, sales were very nice, thank you. But the response was in the form of a single letter, a very erudite letter containing a series of auras, notes, comments, authored by the late Charles Elkin, and his comments were acknowledged in the preface to the second edition. Many of his comments were incorporated. The second reaction was really surprising. The media ignored, totally and completely. For that matter, most Jews didn't know what Birkas Hachama was all about. There was only one publication that reacted. That was Newsweek. Newsweek came to my home and had a cameraman. There was an interview. There were pictures. This was going to be the feature article in the religion column on the week of Birkas Hachama. And then somebody attempted to assassinate the Pope. And that became the big story. Birkas Hachama was ignored. A couple of years afterwards, I found myself in Avignon in southern France. And I was in a beautiful shul, and suddenly my wife tugs me by the jacket. She's always looking for strange and exotic sidurim and machzorim. And she tells me, look at this. There was a siddur that contained a version of Hanisin Tshua, and the tefillah was for the Apapior. It wasn't the Pope of Rome, it was for the Pope of Avignon in the time when there was this rival papacy. So I then understood what having mispalel b'shleimo shel malchus means. Nobody wants to be preempted by something of that sort. This time, the reaction is totally different. This time, there I have received no letters, but myriads of email. No email 28 years ago. Number two, the media. The phone doesn't stop ringing. Friday, a phone call from a reporter of all things, the Wall Street Journal. They want to do something on Birkas Hachama. I won't even talk about phone calls from people asking for an explanation of one point or another, or people who think they have a aura of one kind or another. Yes, one of the emails I received was from a mechaber of a sefer. I'd never heard of the mechaber, never heard of the sefer, but he calls with a complaint. Or he writes, he emails the complaint. The complaint is that he has written a sefer on the calendar, and I don't quote the Sefer. Not only don't I quote the Sefer, but he addresses one of the problems that I discuss, and I don't cite his resolution of the problem. Well, that email came early enough to be able to insert a reference in the second printing, not a second edition, but the second printing of this year's version of Birkas Hachama. Not that I really think that he has solved the problem, but he's certainly entitled to a citation. This time around, things are very, very different. Last time, there was one gentleman who was regarded as something of an eccentric, and he turned Birkas Hachama into a happening, some type of sunrise service on a mountain someplace or other. This time, the environmentalists have somehow latched on to Birkas HaChama, and this is the big issue, and everybody asks me, what can I say about the environment and Birkas HaChama, all reporters. And of course, one reporter, as I anticipated, I'm surprised there wasn't more than one, wants to know, why is this not a form of sun worship? And my response to him is that he is right on point, that he agrees with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda and the Seftan Brochus, who says the person who makes the brocha on the Chama Harize Derech Acheres, that this is a form of minus. And, or at least people may think it's a form of minus, and I have to caution him that this has absolutely nothing to do with sun worship. Not only that, but the Chidah thought it was very improper to recite Aleinu after Kiddush Levana, because it looks as if we are bowing in the direction of the moon, and that certainly is paganism. Alachas kamo v'kamo, people argued that there shouldn't be an Aleinu after Birkas HaChama. In any event, the phenomenon, the socio-religious phenomenon, is really striking. It's Achshir Dora. There is a new generation, it's a new time, and people are really excited by every aspect of Jewish observance, and this is really one of them. However, what I'm concerned with, basically, are the aspects of halacha that are associated with this. The astronomy is very fascinating, it's very interesting, as has already been demonstrated to us, but I've been called a halakhic positivist. I think that was intended as a term of derision, but I don't regard it as such. I know what a logical positivist is. The logical positivism was a school of philosophy that flourished in the 20s, the 30s, and it's emblematic for its notion that the meaning of a proposition is its mode of verification. If you can't tell me how to prove or to disprove a proposition, then epistemologically you've got to regard the proposition as being devoid of meaning. The things that interest me are the aspects of halachic positivism. What I'm really interested in is what are the halachic ramifications that makes it meaningful. That's what Birkas HaChama is all about. So I am really much more concerned with Birkas HaChama on Ayim HaMu'unon, a cloudy day when you can't see the sun. How late in the day can you recite Birkas HaChama? We have Zman for Krishna, Zman for Tvila, and what is the Zman for Birkas HaChama? I'm also more concerned with the issue of whether there is a sophic about Yom HaMunon or something of the sort, whether you can make the bracha, you can't make the bracha. Can you recite a sophic bracha in Aramaic and be yotze without a possibility of violating the Isur of a bracha levatole? I'm also concerned with regard to the fact that if you examine some of the rules governing the calendar carefully, you will discover that on some years, Pesach occurs not in the proper time, even if you use the more accurate tekufa of Rav Adah rather than the tekufa of Shmuel. We've got the problem that Pesach has to be b'chedesh aviv, and there are years in which it just doesn't work out. All of that is very fascinating. If you're interested in the last point, you can look at page 52 in Birkas HaChama. But I'm not going to talk about any of those things today. What I want to talk about today is the global issue. What is Birkas HaChama all about? The Shaila of the Tam at the Seder. I'm a very simple person. Mazus, what is it and what's it here for? The bracha is, after all, a very simple bracha. In addition to Shemu Malchus, which is the formula of every bracha, it's got exactly three additional words. Oise, Masa, Bereshis. So, when Rabbi Riss invited me to speak about all of this, I responded by saying, what in the world can I say that hasn't already been said in the book? After all, we're dealing with a simple bracha, and we can explain the source of the bracha, the ramifications, the complexities, etc., etc. I remember that as a Talmud, making the observation that there can be nothing more boring than listening to somebody talk about what you have already read and contributing no new information. That used to be a criticism of Rosh Yeshiva, who said a shir without chidushim. When I got a little bit older, I discovered that there are things that are even more boring, and that is repeating things that you've already written. So I will try not to repeat what I've already written. But that's a tough assignment, because after writing 250 pages about Birkas HaChamor, what is there left to say? Well, all I can do is try to elucidate, clarify, expand upon that which has already been written. Yadus has a kind of fixation with astronomy, astrology, celestial forces, and the calendar is only the iceberg, the tip of the iceberg of that fascination. The Novi says, Sumor Menechem Rumi Boreila, Hamisib Misfort Salon, Vahulon Bishem Yikro, Mrivini Mamiskoyach Ishloy Nedar. The Novi marvels at these celestial creations, all of those bodies that were created in the heavens, each one having an assigned task and assigned place. And the Rabbeinu Shalom knows each and every one by name. The Abarbanel, which is on the slide, I hope, the Abarbanel points to that phenomenon and constructs a teleological proof for the existence of the deity, a kind of argument by design. Says the Abarbanel that the existence of the universe is directly contingent upon the size, the position, the velocity, and let me not forget, centrifugal force of each of these planetary bodies. If they had been created different size, shapes, positions, without all of these laws of nature in operation, the universe would not long exist. And the Abarbanel says all of this in a comment on the Posuk, that when the Ribbono Shel Olam saw what he had created, when he created the celestial bodies, Vayar Elokim Ki Tov, the Ribbono Shel Olam takes a look at all of this, and he says, Eureka, Kaviyachol. It works! It all fits together like the pieces of a cosmic jigsaw puzzle. And if it didn't fit together in precisely that way, there wouldn't be a universe. So the fixation, as I called it, that Judaism has upon celestial matters, upon astronomy, etc., is really its fixation upon the Ribbono Shel Olam as the Borei Olam, as the Creator, and the evidence of creation we find by looking at the heavens. Sumerei Nechem, Berumi Borei Olam. Says the Rabbeinu Bachi in the Chavos HaLevavos, that Posuk is not a declarative proposition. It's not a statement of fact. Sumerei Menechem is an imperative. It's a tzivui. The Novi is telling each and every one of us to look up at the sky, to reflect upon what we see, and to recognize the godless Haborei by observing those phenomena. Chazal turned this into a very, very concrete halacha, and they expand upon this relatively simple idea. Says the Gemara on Shabbos, Kol ha-yidei al-achashi v'tkufis mazolos v'nechashev ol ha-kos v'imer Well, Hashem lo yabitu, o ma'ase yodav lo yirohu. A person who is capable of being machashev to kufeis and mazolais, he can for himself calculate the seasons, the equinoxes, the solstices, and the mazolais plot and chart the movement of the celestial bodies of all the signs of the zodiac. and fails to do so is remiss. He is missing something. And the posuk, as Chazal interpreted, censure him for not engaging in that enterprise. What is it that Chazal are underscoring here? It's a very simple notion, codified by the Rambam and the Mishnah Torah in a totally different context. When the Rambam in Hilchos Yesedi HaTorah talks about the mitzvah of Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, the Rambam, at least by implication, tells us that it is not a mitzvah to love. It's not a mitzvah that is emotive in nature. It's very difficult to command emotions. The Sefer Haredim has difficulty with that concept in purely human terms, dealing with other types of mitzvahs. Says the Rambam, the mitzvah of Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha is not an emotional mitzvah. You don't fulfill it by feeling an emotion. You fulfill the mitzvah by intellectually recognizing the grandeur of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam and his creation. Lefum ha'yidiyah ha'ava. Ava and yidiyah, love and knowledge, those become conflated into a single concept. How do you love the Rabbeinu Shel Olam? By apprehending his glory, grandeur, and majesty. And how do you do that? Ma'aseh Bereishis. Natural law. The way the Rabbeinu Shel Olam created the universe. We can repeat, like robots, that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is the Bereishis, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is this, that, and the other, all the Yud Gimel Ikrim. A student memorizes the Pythagorean theorem. A square plus B square equals C square, and he can use that proposition in doing all kinds of mathematical calculations. Does he necessarily understand why A square and B square must equal C square? He studied it, it's true, it works! More than that, he doesn't know. If it works, it's good enough. The geometer, or even the 10th grade student of geometry, who sits in class as the Pythagorean theorem is demonstrated, suddenly has an intellectual awareness, a simcha, intellectual pleasure, which comes not from knowing A squared plus B squared equals C squared, but the recognition that it's a necessary proposition, that A squared and B squared have to equal C squared, that the universe could not be otherwise. That is far, far different qualitatively and epistemologically from being able to repeat the rote fact. That is a very low level of knowledge. Understanding why it must be the case, that's an entirely different kind of knowledge. Anyone can tell you when Tkuvas Nisan is. Take out a shul calendar, it's got it. You want to know how to be Mechashev, Tkufais, Mazolais. You have all kinds of charts. Look at the chart will tell you. Does that mean you understand it? Of course not. It's hard enough to grasp. You've got to spend time and effort trying to understand these things. When Chazal tell us that a person who is capable is a Yidea, Lechashev, Tkufais, and Mazolais, Ve'enei Cheshev, that he is being remiss, they're talking about people who rely upon the bare facts. You can look it up in a book and you'll know when the tkuf is. You'll know all about the movements of the signs of the zodiac, of the constellations, etc., etc. Does that mean you understand why it has to be that way? And why it couldn't be a different way? Does that mean that you know how to figure out the tkufa for yourself, or to be able to figure out the moilad of next month, and the month after, and the month afterwards? Ad bi'az goyel tzedek. Doesn't mean you're able to do that at all. Simply reading it in a source book is not what Chazal meant. Chazal said you have an obligation to study Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh in all its ramifications, with all the Mefarshim, in order to understand precisely why the universe operates in this manner. If you understand that, then you are capable of formulating the Abarbanel's argument from design. And you know that there's a Rabbeinu Shloimeh, not because somebody told you, because you have a Messiah going way back to Avraham Avinu, but because you've demonstrated it anew. You have proven it to yourself on the basis of the Chishuv of Tkufos and Mazalos. This is what Chazal regarded as the optimum, the ideal. This is what a person who has the intellectual capacity is required to engage in. It's not simply a meaningless exercise. It's all part and parcel of the mitzvah of the Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha. And then, of course, we've got to relate all of this to the bracha of Oseh Maaseh Bereishis. So let me explain what this has to do with the bracha of Oseh Maaseh Bereishis. In Brisk, everything has two dinim. I have three dinim. The bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Oseh Maaseh Bereishis, is a bracha recited when one observes various phenomena, multiple and diverse phenomena. But La'aniyas Daiti, they are really three separate brachas. One text, but three distinct brachas. Let me start with the first. If you see high mountains, you see deep canyons, there's an obligation to recite the bracha Oseh Maaseh Bereishis. I don't really know what the shear of a canyon is. But I remember once in my life, I saw the Grand Canyon. And I remember at the time commenting that the shear of a Giva, I do not know. But the Grand Canyon has the brisker shear. No question. You have to make a bracha Oseh Maaseh Bereishis on the Grand Canyon. What is the bracha? Why do I make a bracha when I see the Grand Canyon or Mount Everest or what have you? That is a bracha not for some novel phenomenon. They didn't go and put the Grand Canyon, where is it? In Yellowstone National Park. The National Park Service didn't create it for me to come and make the bracha. The canyon has been there from Sheshesh Yemei Bereishis. And that's precisely what the bracha is all about. That bracha is a bracha on what I would call the historical phenomenon of Maaseh Bereishis. And I see it in all its wondrous grandeur. Of course, I see the whole world. When I see the rest of the world, I'm jaded because I saw yesterday or the day before, and it doesn't really make an impression on me. When I see something extraordinary, something that I don't see on a regular basis, then I am required to praise the Rabbeinu Shloimeh for having created the universe at the very beginning. It's a historical bracha. Just as the bracha on the rainbow is a historical bracha. You see the rainbow in the sky. It's not today that the Rabbeinu Shloimeh was Keiris Bris with mankind. It goes back to the Mabul Bimei Noach. And then he enters into the Bris. And when I see it, I am required to make a bracha for that historical phenomenon. That seems to me to be the nature of Oseh Maaseh Bereishis when you make it on the Yam HaGadol or on the Gevoyis, the Harim Gevoyim, etc. And that explains to me one aspect of halacha. I know why you recite it only once in 30 days. If you live overlooking the Grand Canyon and you wake up every morning and you see this Giva, you become desensitized very quickly. Then it's no different from going out for us, going out into the street and looking at the sky and looking at the earth and looking at any natural phenomenon. If you don't see it for 30 days and suddenly the appearance is before you, then you recognize that this is part of the wonder that the Rabbeinu Shloimeh performed when he created the universe. That's one bracha of Oseh Maaseh Bereishis. Then there's another type of bracha. Same text, same formula, Oseh Maaseh Bereishis, but it's for an entirely different phenomenon. When you see thunder, when you see lightning, you have to make a bracha Oseh Maaseh Bereishis. The bracha is praising the Rabbeinu Shloimeh
not for having created lightning in the primordial period. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam is creating the lightning right now. You see it in front of your eyes, and you're required to make a bracha. It's a bracha for a presently created phenomenon. And Chazal anticipated that when you see such a phenomenon, it will evoke in you the response that only the Rebbeinu Shel Olam could do this. It's a form of religious experience. And it can be a very, very intense religious experience. One of the experiences that William James didn't describe in his varieties of religious experience is an experience that I had. It was, to me, one of the most powerful spiritual moments in my life. I was almost 16 years old, taking a freshman course in biology, and took a little piece of leaf as instructed, and put it under a microscope, and behold, there under the microscope are chloroplasts chasing each other, one after the other, running back and forth in the leaf as electronically magnified. That is an experience. You see how photosynthesis works in front of your eyes. Chazal didn't ordain a bracha of Eisa Maisa Bereshis for looking at this phenomenon under a microscope. And that's probably because Chazal didn't take cognizance of subclinical phenomena. That's a halachic wrinkle. But had they done so, I have no question whatsoever that if you have to make a bracha for Zikin, then you have to make a bracha for this also. The spiritual thrill, the intellectual joy, is certainly much, much more powerful. And if no one has experienced such, the person is simply missing an Erlebnis. It's something that has to be experienced in order to appreciate. These brachas are really designed to emphasize the notion that there is no sharp distinction between the miraculous and the natural. Nes and teva are two sides of the same coin. It could be proven in a variety of different ways. I could cite you statements of the Ramban in Chumash. Even more significant is a Meshech Chochma. I think it's in Parashas Bechukosai. He says that miracles are not designed for themselves. No less, says the Meshech Chochma, is designed for its own purpose. The purpose of Nisim is entirely instrumental. It's designed to teach us that all of Teva is a Nes. The problem with us is we're desensitized. Every day the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, we take it for granted. So if you see it, you don't remark upon how wondrous all of this is. Every once in a while you have to get a jolt. You have to see something out of the ordinary. And you're supposed to recognize, as Chazal say, that even Nisim were built into the universe, Da'isna, Imai Sebereshis, that Kriyas Yamsuf would occur at a certain time. It's designed to impress upon us that Teva is really also just another form of Nes. That is why, if you say Hallel every day, that's because you think that you're saying Hallel for Nisim every single day. And you're not supposed to be saying Hallel for Nisim every single day. You're supposed to be recognizing that Teva is Nes. That's also, says the Meshech Chochma, why a person who says Ashrei b'chol yoin is muftach lo yishu ben olam haba. The real perception of the grandeur and glory of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is in all the things that are described in Ashrei, the Viseich es yedechem az b'lochol chai rotzon, etc., etc. That everything that we regard as natural, ordinary, run-of-the-mill, all of that is really a miracle performed by the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. The Bali Musar took that notion literally and used that to explain a teretz to the Beis Yis of Kasha on why do we have 8 days of Hanukkah. There was enough oil for one day, enough we should have a commemoration of the Nes. The Nes of Hanukkah is only 7 days. The first day, there was enough oil that could have burnt Bederech HaTeva. Where is the Nesir? To which they answered that Chazal, of course, they ordained the days of Chanukah for the commemoration of the Nes of Pach Shemen. But lest you think that it's only a Nes, a miracle, something which is apparently, or appears to us, as a violation of natural law, requires celebration and acknowledgement to the Rabbanim Shel Olam, they gave us another day, which is there to celebrate Teva, Mishaimer, the Shemin Yadlik, Yoviv Yemer Lachim Mitzvah Yadlik. There's no reason why oil has to burn and vinegar not burn. Vinegar could burn as well as oil, or oil not burn as well as vinegar. Or the Rabbi Shalom decided that that's how he's going to create his universe. And we need an occasion to impress that upon ourselves. So, we have two different brachas, Eloisei Ma'aseh Bereishis, all subsumed in one rubric, one text for three separate brachas. There's a third Eisem Eisem Reishis Laniyas Daiti, a bracha which is not an acknowledgement of the wondrous historical phenomenon of the creation of the universe, and a bracha which is not the acknowledgement of a present chidush, novel occurrence in nature, not something which is extraordinary at all. The third Eisem Eisem Reishis is there to teach, to underscore, to reinforce the notion of Mechadesh B'chol Yom Tamid Ma'aseh Bereishis. Now let me digress just for a moment. In order to explain why Chazal ordained a bracha of that nature, and what its purpose and function really is. It seems to me that this Eisem Eisem Bereishis is designed to teach what philosophers call the doctrine of continuous creation, or sometimes the doctrine of constant conservation. I use those terms interchangeably, but they really aren't interchangeable, as, I don't know if Jill's student is here, but as he caught right away. If you look at the basic doctrine as formulated by the Rambam in two separate places, the first is in Perek Aleph, Halach Aleph, of Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, says the Rambam, Yesodei Yesodei Samei Chochmos, Leida Sheyesha Motzi Rishayim, the first two lines of this three-line halach in the Rambam I don't have to dwell upon. It's telling you the Rabbi Shalom created the universe. My Kamashmalon. Kamashmalon is the last clause. When he tells us that everything, all the Nimtzoyim, Shemayim Voretz, and Mashabinehem, everything in the celestial spheres on the earth and what's in between do not exist. Ela me'amita simotzei, only through the medium of the veracity of his existence. The Rambam is stating very simply, creation is not a once in eternity phenomenon. Creation takes place in some sense. I will talk in a moment. Creation takes place on a continuous, ongoing basis. And it's not just as if the Rabbeinu Shel Olam could have created the universe, and heaven forbid, he can now go on eternal sabbatical or whatever. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam is needed. His presence is needed in order to guarantee the continued existence of the universe. And were he, heaven forfend, can't even conceive of such notions, because the non-existence of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is an oxymoron, the Rambam would tell us. If we could conceive of such a thing, then the universe couldn't exist either. The Rambam makes that point even more forcefully in the Hakdamah to Perek Chelek, when he talks about the first of his Yud Gimel Ikrim. In addition to telling us simply that the Rabban Yishloilam exists, he continues by saying that the Rabban Yishloilam, who ilas mitzius anim soim kulam, bei kiyum mitziusam, umimenu kiyumam, val yala alev hebar mitziusai, ki behebar mitziusai nizbata mitzius kol nimsoim, vilei nisha nimso shi skai mitziusai. I don't think I have to translate. What the Rambam? I do? Okay, I'm sorry. So I'll try. I'll add lib. He is the cause of the existence of existing things, all of them. In him is the continuity of their existence. And from him comes their existence. Let it not occur to the mind the non-existence of the deity. Because in the non-existence of his existence, the existence of all created things would be nullified, and there would not remain any creature that could exist other than through his existence. I may have been a little bit inaccurate. Okay. That's the essence of what the Rabban is saying. It is simply an amplification of what he said much more briefly in the Hilchos Yesod HaTorah. The Rabban here is telling us that the Rabban Yishloilam's presence is necessary not only as the historical creator, but as a kind of the dynamo of the existence of our universe. You've got to think of it in terms of modern phenomena. Think about it as electricity. I'm not a physicist, I'm not an engineer, but a little bit I know. It's very simple. All that I know is that if you turn off the generator, there's no electricity. You got to have the generator constantly if you're going to have electricity. You can't just create a certain batch of electricity and go on vacation and expect the electricity to continue flowing. You need the generator to continually manufacture new electricity. Being mitzius is created by the Rabban Yishloilam. And that goes to the Rambam's definition of the nature of the Rabban Yishloilam. And he's telling us that the Rabban Yishloilam is the cause of all existence, and he is an ongoing cause of existence. Without him, there could not be any existence whatsoever. Now, I have presented this doctrine of continuous creation in a very particular way. The Rambam, in the first chelik of the Nor Nevuchim, Perik Ayin Gimel, the seventh proposition, he's there discussing the Kalam philosophers, and they used a similar notion in order to construct a proof for the existence of the deity. They argued that the universe has substance, what we call a chemer yuli, and also has accident. It's a philosophical term, I'm not going to define it. And they maintain that the universe could not exist if the Rabban Yishloilam did not recreate accidents in every moment of existence. The Kalam also accepted what the translators call an atomic notion of time, as if time is made of discrete particles. I prefer to use the term a quantum notion of time. The Kalam had their modern-day replica in the philosophy of René Descartes, and Descartes presented a similar proof for the existence of the deity, and it was predicated upon the Cartesian notion of time. Descartes had this view of time not as a kind of a wave or a flow or what have you, but time as being literally a fourth dimension and made up of little particles, which I would call quanta. Now you've got a problem. If you have little quanta, then there's got to be something in between. How do you get from one piece of time to the next piece of time? Said Descartes, well, obviously, you need a transportation system to get you from the first piece of time to the next piece of time. That transportation system, says Descartes, is the Rabban Yishloilam. And how does he do it? He can't schlep you across something which doesn't exist, because what's in between is, shall we call it ether instead of space? It's nothing, it's nothingness. So what the Rabban Yishloilam does, says Descartes, is to recreate the universe every minute. He recreates it every microsecond, and he recreates it in a new quantum of time. That's really a Kalam argument, and the Rambam rejects it. The Rambam rejects it in part because the Rambam has a totally different notion of time.
The Rambam does not regard time as a nivra, and certainly not as atomic or quanta in nature. For the Rambam, time is an accident of motion, and motion is an accident of matter. So you can't construct this kind of a proof, and the Rambam just dismisses the Kalam proof out of hand. Some, I think, had problems because they read the Rambam as denying in the Mer Nevuchim what he clearly affirms both in the Pirush HaMishnayos and in the Mishnah Torah, as if he's denying the doctrine of continuous creation. I don't want to bore you by talking about the fact that Rambam there may be only decrying the notion that accidents are recreated, but makes no such statement with the Chaymer Iyuli, or substance, primordial substance. As I understand the Rambam is really focusing upon a notion of continuous conservation rather than constant creation. And while philosophers may fudge them and use the terms interchangeably, and I am guilty of doing so in Birkas Achama, these are fundamentally two different theoretical constructs. What the Rambam tells us in the Mishnah Torah and the Pirush HaMishnayos is not what I have now called more precisely the notion of continuous creation, but rather the notion of constant conservation. The notion that the universe may have been created once in an eternity, but it takes the same amount of force, power, creationism, to keep it in existence, to sustain it, as it did to create it in the first place. And that if you remove this underlying power from the universe, what the Rambam refers to in the Pirush HaMishnayos as Hedar Mitziyusai, then the rest of the universe could not exist at all. That leads us directly to what I called the third bracha of Eisa Maasei Bereishis. This third bracha, same formula, but the bracha is a bracha that you pronounce in acknowledgement and recognition of the doctrine of constant conservation of the universe. It is a bracha in which we acknowledge that the Rabbeinu Shlomo's presence is needed on a continual and ongoing basis in order to preserve the universe, and without his presence, there could not be a world in which to live. And how do you see that in Eisa Maasei Bereishis? That is, wherever I say, Lanias Daiti, the Eisa Maasei Bereishis of Birkas HaChama. Just reflect for a moment. When you go out on April the 8th in the morning, Erev Pesach, and you look at the sun, will the sun look any different on April 8th from the way it looked on April the 7th? And if you go out on the first day of Pesach on April the 9th, will you be missing anything in your observation of the sun that you didn't see a day before? You will see exactly the same thing April 7th, April 8th, and April 9th. It's not like the Horim HaGvoim and the Gvois and the Amagodol and Zikim, meteorites and what have you. Those are things that you don't see all the time. The sun you see every single day, nothing has changed. Then what in the world is the bracha all about? I have called the third type of bracha, this Eisa Maasei Bereishis, as an evocative bracha. It's not responsive in the sense that I now see what the Bereishis created 5,000 X number of years ago, or what he's creating right now because a minute before there was no lightning, and now there's lightning. This is a reflective bracha. I'm supposed to be internalizing what I see and think about it. You can't recognize what you're making the bracha for unless you internalize the experience. It's designed for reflection, introspection, which in turn are designed to yield the feeling that one has to praise the Rabbeinu Shlomo for continuously conserving the universe. And what is the phenomenon that occasions this reflection? That's what we've seen before on the slides. is all the fact that the Son returns to a place in which He was created on the same day of the week and the same hour of the day that it was created in Sheish Yashim Ebreishis. It's the beginning of a new cycle. And you wouldn't know this by looking at the sun. You can't know it unless you've done your homework. If you've done your homework and recognize what's happening on April 8th, then you should be scratching your head, leaning back, closing your eyes, reflecting upon all of this, and recognizing that the universe is a Galgal HaChazer. It's a Machzor Gadol that goes back and forth, all over again. And that this is only because the Ribono Shel Olam guarantees the existence of the created universe through Amitas Mitziusai. And otherwise, it wouldn't exist at all. I think that I can demonstrate that this Oisemaisa Bereishis is not the only occasion that Chazal at least considered for the recitation of what I call Oisemaisa Bereishis sub 3. We already had sub 1, sub 2, and this is sub 3. Sub 3 occurs once in 28 years, but there were other candidates for that phenomenon. The Gemara in Brachos, Amar Abaye, Ki osa mitra kuli leilya, ubitzafra osa santo megayiluhu l'shamaya. The Gemara says that Abaye thought that the bracha Isamaisa Bereishis should be recited on another occasion as well. What was this occasion? When there comes rain all night long, and the morning comes this asanta, this great wind, and megayelu l'shamaya, it then blows away the rain, the clouds, and you see the sky in its pristine clarity. At that point, said Abaye, you have to recite the brach of Eisa Maisa Bereishis. Well, what is that brach? What's it all for? Rashi tells us, kach hoya b'riyosa, elo kisohu anonim. When we look out, in addition to light pollution, you can never really see the sky in its pristine glory. There's too much going on up there, different kinds of pollution, who knows what. If you want to see the sky, the way the sky looked in Sheish Yashim Ebreishis before Anonim, before clouds came and obscured it, you need a rain that blows, that comes all night long. And when the rain is blown away, then you have a clean sky, no more pollution, and you make the bracha Eisa Maisa Bereishis. If I take Rashi's interpretation of the Gemara literally, Rashi is telling me that this isn't a new Eisa Maisa Bereishis. This is what kind of Eisa Maisa Bereishis? Eisa Maisa Bereishis sub 1. You're telling me the historical phenomenon of creation. This is what the sky looked like in its pristine glory when the Ribono Shel Olam created it. You can't see it every day of the week. Every day of the week there's pollution, smoke, anoni. But on this occasion you can really see it. Then you have to make a bracha Isamaisa Bereishis. I have one kasha at Rashi. If this is like the bracha dealing with tall mountains, deep valleys, or Yam HaGodol, then the halacha should be that if this happens twice in a 30-day period, you don't say Eisa Maisa Bereishis. I don't see any evidence of that. So I would reinterpret the Gemara, and I think, luli d'mistapino, I would say a different explanation entirely. But I think that you can really read it into Rashi as well. The phenomenon seems to me to be comparable not to tall mountains and canyons. It seems to me to be comparable to the phenomenon of zikim, like lightning. When the rain comes and then you have a wind that blows it away, it seems to me that the Gemara is telling us that this is comparable to thunder. I'm sorry, to lightning. And when do you make a brach on lightning? How frequently? Whenever it's the spas ruho anonim, whenever the clouds go away, if new clouds come, there's new lightning, it's a new phenomenon. What is the brach on lightning? That was Eisa Maisa Bereishis sub 2. It's the second din in Eisa Maisa Bereishis. I am now seeing creation before my eyes.
when the rain comes and then the wind blows it all away, and I see the heavens in their pristine glory, I see it being recreated in front of my eyes. That's no Chiddush whatsoever. Those go to either Eisam Eisav Reishis sub 1 or Eisam Eisav Reishis sub 2. I, however, have a parallel text in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi tells us, B'meisach Shomim, you say this bracha of Eisam Eisav Reishis when you've got rain and you've got the wind blowing away. B'meisach Shomim Bilvad, Lach HaShloshe Yomim. Only the rains for 3 days straight, and then all this happens. The Yerushalmi says you make the bracha only for rains for 3 days. Chassam Sofer was puzzled. What kind of 3 days is necessary here? And he changes the girsa, and he says it should say lamid yom. And he reads the Yerushalmi as a kind of emendation of the text of our Gemara. You do this only for rains for 30 days, and somehow it's like the Horim Gvoyis, the 30-day rule. L'anias Daiti, the Yerushalmi is telling you something totally different. What happens when it rains for 3 days? And then the sun suddenly reappears. When did that last happen? That happened, well, we have since the Churban HaBayis, this hasn't happened, as the Gemara tells us clearly. But when was the first occasion that the sun wasn't there for 3 days and suddenly appears? Sheish Yishimei Bereishis. In Sheish Yishimei Bereishis, there was darkness for 3 days, and then suddenly there comes the sun. Says the Yerushalmi, that's the Mechayev of Eisam Eisav Reishis. And what is this bracha, pray tell? Not for a historical phenomenon, not for something which is being created in front of our eyes, but it is the reenactment of Eisav Reishis. It's a new Eisav Reishis that is presided because we are called upon to reflect upon Eisav Reishis and to recognize that Eisav Reishis is an ongoing experience. That's a phenomenon that continues every moment of our existence. It's not lahalacha. You won't find it cited by the Rambam. You won't find it cited in Shulchan Aruch. The Yerushalmi is the statement of Yerushalmi. But it was a candidate for what I have called Eisam Eisav Reishis sub 3 that was at least considered by Chazal. So, if the only Eisam Eisav Reishis of the third category that we have is Birkas HaChama, it remains a category, a new expression of thanksgiving to the Ribbono Shel Olam, a praise of the Ribbono Shel Olam for continually creating the universe, a praise that can be uttered only upon reflection. It's the birth is the result of intellectual awareness. And this is what Chazal or Mechayev. I think that I can prove that this Eisam Eisav Reishis is different from every other Eisam Eisav Reishis in a very simple way. We've already seen on the basis of the slide presentation that it's all based upon the calculations of the vernal equinox formulated by Shmuel, which in effect, Shmuel's calendar was none other than the Julian calendar. Only we know very well that it was inaccurate. The Gemara knew it was inaccurate. Rav Adah, one of the Amoraim, gave us different kufis, which we use for other purposes of halacha. We used kufa Shmuel for only Pirkas Achama, for Talumotar, and yes, there's Ramah that you don't drink water on the Yom HaTekufa. It's another area, it's a different area, an arcane area of halacha, and there are many places who disagree with that totally and completely. So if Chazal themselves realize that Shmuel's calendar was inaccurate, then why are they ordaining a bracha to commemorate a phenomenon that doesn't occur at this time? And the answer is, and why do they make Talam Motor according to this calendar? Because everybody can figure out when to say Talam Motor. Go figure out Tkufa Ravada. If you're one of these people, Machashik, Tkufa Samazola, you'll be able to figure out when the Tkufa is, and you'll know when to begin saying Talam Motor. What is a simple, untutored, unlettered Jew supposed to do? He knows how to figure out Shmuel's Tekufa. That's easy. That's small change. And he can figure 60 days after Tekufa's Tishrei. It's easy for him. When you're doing something amami, something for the populace at large, it's got to be simple. If Chazal want people to reflect upon the fact that the Rabbeinu Shloimeh is Mechadish, Betuvei, Bechol, Yom Tovim, Maaseh, Bereishis, you can't wait for the sun to return to the real place it occupied in the universe at the time of creation. I think it's something like every 267,000 years. So they had to have some other calculation that this was going to be at all meaningful. So they used the Tekuva of Shmuel, and people are supposed to recognize what it is that they're called upon to reflect upon. More than that, that's obvious, that's the tip of the iceberg. More than that, why did Chazal not ordain the bracha for Tuesday night? The Tekuva of Shmuel occurs 6 o'clock Tuesday evening. And we don't recite the bracha until Wednesday morning when the sun rises. The Tekuva in Eretz Yisrael on this April 7th, on Tuesday, will occur at 5:39, give or take a few seconds. It occurs not at 6 o'clock, but 5:39. And that's because using solar time, 5:39 is 6 o'clock. The clocks are off. Every clock is off. We have 1 hour time zones. You don't suddenly go from 1 minute to the next minute because you're going a little bit further west or east. You do these in increments of an hour. So the real Tekufa in Yerushalayim is 5:39. Shkias HaChamor in Yerushalayim is at 6:10. That gives you 11 minutes of sunlight. You could recite Birkas HaChamor between 5:39 and 5:50. You don't have to wait for Wednesday morning. Then why did Chazal say wait for Wednesday morning in Yerushalayim? They knew that it was off. They knew that the Kufa was wrong. The answer to that, I think, is simple. The answer to that is that if you were to tell people to make the bracha before 5:50 on Tuesday night, which is before after the Tekuva of Shmuel, it would be a self-contradiction. It's a tarti d'asasrei. The Ma'aris were created at the time of the Tekuva. They were created at 6 o'clock. And at 6 o'clock, it's after the Shkia. The Shkia is 5:50. And you're telling people to make the bracha before the Tekuva and to reflect upon Shmuel's calculations, this is where the sun was, etc., etc. You can't tell people to engage in self-contradiction. So they had no choice. They had no choice but to say, you don't make the bracha on Tuesday evening because that makes no sense at all. It's illogical. And they said, therefore you make the bracha on Wednesday morning. That's nice in Eretz Yisrael. How about America? In the United States, Eretz Yisrael is ahead of us, right? The difference is 7 hours. The Tekuva of Shmuel at 6 o'clock will here be 11 o'clock in the morning. That gives you all day for Birkas HaChamor. And it's no Tarti D'Sasrei. It's no contradiction at all. Everybody knows that the time in Eretz Yisrael is different. There was a 28 years ago, there was a gentleman, maybe Marech Yomim, he is a Rosh Kolel in Neir Shorim. His name is Rav Moshe Nochum Shapiro. He published an article in Meiria, and he said in America you should be making Birkas HaChamor on Tuesday. Not only that, but if you look at the slaves non Birkas HaChamor, etc., etc., you can't make it on Wednesday morning anymore. It's a Baruch HaLevatol, etc., etc. You will find an article by this fellow Blyth, in which he takes issue with Rav Moshe Nochum Shapiro, happens to be a dear friend of mine, and he's a Talmud Chochem Gadol. He made Svarim on the Gvulei Saoretz and on Shemitas Ksofim, but in this case I think he made an error. And that is, everybody knows or should know that when they call out the Meulid and Shabbos Parshas Mevorachim, the Shabbos, I didn't go look up when the Meilud is going to be, and I wasn't Mechashev, the Tkufis and Mazolais. So I can't tell you when the Meilud is going to be next week, at least not now. But when they announce it in Shul, it's wrong. Why is it wrong? Because they're telling you when the Meilud is Yerushalayim time, not when the Meilud is here. L'may nafkamina, the meaning of the proposition is a halachic ramification. Why do I bother pointing this out? Because if you look in a luach and it tells you, save zman kiddush levonah, it's telling you to save zman kiddush levonah, the midpoint between the middle of last month and the middle of the next month, they're giving you the save zman kiddush levonah yerushalayim. Here, it's a different save zman kiddush levonah. The clock is different, you've got to subtract the appropriate number of hours. But why do the calendars give me the Meilad Yerushalayim, and why do I have to go through these calculations? Because the Meilad is an astronomical phenomenon. The Meilad occurs once all over the earth. Maybe a different time on the clock, but it's one Meilad. It happens in one split second. So of course there's a single Meilad. Insofar as Kufas as Birkas HaChama is concerned, we're dealing with something quite different. The Rambam, I don't know if it's there, The Rambam in the Mishnah Torah tells us that after the Tkufa has occurred, Kishat Tkufa B'tchilas Leil Dalid, Kishereya Eisa B'yayim Revi B'abeker Mevarech Eisa Ma'isa Bereshis. You're not making the bracha because of some abstract phenomenon that you know has occurred. You make the bracha of Eisa Ma'isa Bereshis when you see the sun. Therefore, you have to be able to see the tkufa of the sun. That I see a sun, there's a tkufa in Eretz Yisrael, that doesn't help me very much. I have to be able to see the sun, the tkufosa, as the vernal equinox becomes apparent to us here in New York City. But that doesn't solve the problem totally and completely. It explains why we don't make the bracha on Tuesday at approximately Chatzos. There is another problem, and that is that if you look at the times in Europe, which was done by the father-in-law of Rav Kook, the Mirror, known as the Aderes, he thought, and again I'm not going to enter into the accuracy of his observations, he thought that you could observe the sun after its real tekufa in Mir, where he was Rav, before the Shkia. And he thought that you could make the bracha on Tuesday evening in this relatively brief window of time when it was already after the tkufa in Eretz Yisrael, and you could observe the tkufa already in Mir. And why does nobody agree with him? Why isn't that what was done in northern parts of Europe and Russia and Lithuania? It seems to me that the answer to that is really the same as what I said before. Chazal knew very well that the whole tkufa is not, astronomically speaking, accurate. And they ordained the tkufa and the bracha following the tkufa for when you see the sun in Eretz Yisrael the next morning. And therefore they ordained it for the rest of the world, the rest of the inhabited universe, in precisely the same way. Ignore the real tekufa. What difference does it make if in Mir, in Siberia, or who knows where, you can actually observe the sun and the tekufa on Tuesday afternoon, and it's a very dicey perception of this real phenomenon? The takona was that all of Klal Yisrael does it at the same hour of the day. It was designed almost artificially to cause people to reflect, to be ma'ames, that the Rebbeinu Shloilom is not only the Mamsi Kol HaMitzoyim, but they continue to exist through Amitas Mitzvusoi. I think that I can make the same point in a related manner, that it is not the only evocative observance that Chazal ordained, that at least for some Rishonim, we have something very similar. I know I'm going over time. Alright, I'll try to be very, very quick. One of the things that is now very much known in something which I was totally unaware of 28 years ago, and that is that 56 years ago, on the occasion of Birkas HaChama, before the last occasion, the Ostrovtser made an observation, or was reported to have made the observation. The observation was that Birkas HaChama occurred on Erev Pesach only twice prior from Sheish Yishmei Bereishis, and that 1925 would be the third such occurrence. The first, he said, was the year of Yitzias Mitzrayim, the time of Gula for Klal Yisrael. The second was the year preceding Purim, the year in which Mordechai and Esther fasted on Erev Pesach and Pesach. That was a year of Gula. And the third is 1925, and with eager anticipation, he said, of course, Mashiach must be coming. This will be the ultimate Gula. In point of fact, his calculations were off. In this edition of Birkas Hachama, you will find charts, tables, telling you all the times that Birkas Hachama occurred on Erev Pesach from Sheshes, Yemei Bereishis. If I go to the standard concept, I probably don't in the first place, talk about that in a moment. And it turns out that it happened multiple times, although before 1925, it had not occurred from something like the 14th century in the 1300s. And after this Birkas Hachama on Erev Pesach, it won't occur again for about 500 years, by which time Mashiach will long since have been here and will be Makadish al Piriyah. So this is the last Birkas Hachama that's guaranteed to be on Erev Pesach. Take advantage. In point of fact, it doesn't seem to be the case. I have problems projecting the calendar back beyond the calendar instituted by Hillel, because then there were Makadish al Piriyah. I certainly have problems when you go back to before Achidish Hazel Lochem Rosh Chodeshim, when I haven't the vaguest idea what it means to talk about a calendar, and I have problems. If somebody has a good theory, let me know. I know the simple explanations. Rashi, for example, tells us that Avraham Avinu meets the Malachim, and he gives them matzahs to eat because it's Pesach. What do you mean it's Pesach? How can you have Pesach without a Mekadish Yisrael to be Mekadish Nizmanim? If there's no parish of Achidish Hazel Lochem, there's no calendar, and you can't have a Pesach. So when you, I know there are answers, but if you're projecting back a calendar way back to the days of the Oves and Tzitzias Mitzrayim, I wonder what calendar are you talking about? Are you just assuming literally that they had the same kind of calculations and that Hillel's calendar was in existence even then? Mechateser. The material that was presented by the Ostrotzer has been shown to be incorrect. Real problem is, why did he think that this was correct? What gave him that bright idea? It's not terribly significant, frankly, but I have given you as a handout something which I received only within the last few days. It's an article that appeared in some type of halachic addendum or accompanying pamphlet to the magazine called HaMishvacha, and it cites a statement of a certain Rabbeinu Shemaya. Rabbeinu Shemaya was the Talmud of Rashi. That much I knew. What I didn't know is that Rabbeinu Shemaya wrote a commentary on the Piyutim. I have enough trouble with the Piyutim, forget about the commentaries. I don't know if this is a published commentary or non-published commentary. And in the piyut for next week, Shabbos, Parshas HaChodesh, you have a piyut which is attributed to Rav Elezer HaKalir. It begins Adiko Chayzer, and its last two stanzas: Yaldus Cheres Vesar Beivayim Cheshben Mitzu Utchilas V'Yosom B'Chaloin Echod Nimtzou, which Art School translates, and I think fairly accurately, we have the Yaldus, the youth of Cheres, which seems to be a reference to the sun, and Sahar, which is easily recognizable as a reference to the moon. The sun and the moon are Boibiyoim Cheshbin Mitzu. Their calculations come on the same day. The Yaldus, the rebirth of sun and moon, occur on the same day. Utchilas v'yoson, and as their original creation, bechaloin echol, in one window, nimtzo. Therefore, reim kenitan lo meserusin motzu, friends, they are firmly resolved to adopt imutz amtzo, to adopt this tradition, lachashev laber lekadish sferis behimotzoi, to declare the ibur hachodesh, and to sanctify the months as they occur. That is the piyut as we have it, the piyut of Rabbi Elezer HaKalir. Now, the parish of Rabbeinu Shemaya understands this a little bit differently from the Art Scroll translation. He understands that this is a reference to the occurrence of Birkas HaChama, the beginning of the Matzah Gadol, the reappearance of the sun in its new cycle, together with Erev Pesach. Where in the world he finds Erev Pesach in this, I don't really understand. But if anybody can explain how you read that into the Piyut, I will be very grateful. To me and the Rabbeinu Shemaya, why am I citing all of this? Because the Rabbeinu Shemaya says two things. Number one, that the piyut is based upon a Mechilto Rabosi, that the Mechilto Rabosi makes a similar statement. It says, Shomu Sheyotzu, Mi'isrom Mi'israyim Hoyechot Sheyshomu L'shnas Levone, V'chot Sheytkufas Shovin. The days of the Tkufa were equal in time, and it was similar to the Chodshei Levone. And then Rabbi Yehuda Shemaya says that he did the calculations, and this Chaloin Echad he wasn't able to find. He says it's inaccurate. And he throws up his hands, he says, this is what Rabbi Yehuda Shemaya told us in explaining the Piyut, and he finds that it's just empirically not correct. I am not an astronomer, and I'm not a mathematician, and I don't even know how to use a computer. But there are programs for these things. I think that the piyut means something else. I think the piyut is telling me that the Yaldas Cheres V'Sahar, that you're telling me that Rosh Chodesh Nissan occurred on the day of the Tkufa, at this point in history, and that's what Mechilta is talking about, that in the year of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Tkuf occurred on Rosh Chodesh Nissan. Is that accurate or is it not accurate? I haven't the vaguest idea. What I do know, and you can look in the charts to prove that I'm right or wrong, that the year of Yetzias Mitzrayim wasn't a year of Tkufas HaChamo, and it therefore couldn't have been a Birkas HaChamo on Erev Pesach. But the fact that it does occur on Erev Pesach, I find to be not without significance. I wish I could say that the virtual guarantee that we're going to have the Gula Shlema on Erev Pesach, April the 8th. It seems to me that there is Yesh Dvorim Begav, that there is something remarkable and something that we ought to reflect upon. And that is, the Gargamar tells us, this Nuslach that we have in the Haggadah, Chayav Odom Liris Hizatz Mekil Hu Yotzom in Mitzrayim, you're cleaved to, on Pesach, to regard yourself as having left Mitzrayim. The Rambam's Girsa, his Haggadah had a slight variation. He says, Chayav Odom Laharis Atzmai, Kil Hu Yotzom in Mitzrayim. What's the difference? Liris Hazatzmai is kind of abstract, theoretical. I gotta think that, you know, Nafi Yetzias Mitzrayim might still be there. Rambam says that you have to demonstrate this. You've got to act as if you left Mitzrayim. That involves internalizing what is simply theoretical and manifesting it in conduct and deportment. And what is Yetzias Mitzrayim all about? Yetzias Mitzrayim is proof of the Hashgach of the Ribbono Shel Olam, divine providence which governs each and every Jew and every event in his life. That is what Pesach is all about for the Rambam. So you have a configuration this year. You have Birkas HaChama, this Reyach HaChama B'Tukufasa, which is there to impress upon us that the Ribbono Shel Olam is the Mechadesh B'Cholim Tomid Ma'aseh Bereishis. And you have Pesach, which is there to reinforce the notion of Hashkocha of the Ribbono Shel Olam over the world. Those two Yesodos of Emunah come together. And here we have another mitzvah which I would call evocative. For the Rambam, Laharis is certainly evocative. I have to act and demonstrate that I've got the message. The Baruch of Eishon Eisev Reishis is a broche when recited is demonstrative of the fact that we have internalized Amitas Mitziusoi and the fact that without Mitziusoi there could not be any Mitziim whatsoever. Those two concepts are not unrelated to the Gula. Olenu is part of our Seder of Birkas HaChama, and we pray, we're Mispalo, L'tzachin Eilu Malcha Shaddai Chol Mebosar Yikru Bishmecho V'yikab L'chulom Es Eil Malchusecho V'sim Lech Aleihem Heira L'Eilam V'ed The emphasis is on the word mehero, speedily. It's not only for Jews. Goyim also are obligated to say this emunah. When the world recognizes that the Rabbeinu Shleilom is the Mamzi Kol Mitzrayim, that the Rabbeinu Shleilom is the Mani Goyim and exercises providence over all of his creatures, when people recognize and acknowledge that, then we can anticipate that the Rabbeinu Shleilom send the Gula Shleima b'mehera b'yameinu. Amen.